Culture Affidavit, episode 161, The Uncollecting Four, The Voyage Home. Hello and welcome to episode 161 of Pop Culture Affidavit, the podcast that takes a look at everything random in the world of popular culture, which is brought to you by the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Network. I'm your host, Tom Paneris, and with a new year having arrived, it's time for my latest uncollecting episode. Now, I usually do these in January, but you may have noticed that I took 2 months off from podcasting. It wasn't intentional, at first at least, but I will say that I guess I needed the mental break, or at least needed this off my plate for a little while because things have ranged from busy to overwhelming. On a scale of 1 to Jesse on Saved by the Bell freaking out, I was that Jesse. So I'm back. I'm so excited for the new year and yet so scared. I got it together to do this episode though, and I will hopefully be on a regular recording schedule as the year goes on. I'll get to our topic in a second, but I do want to remind everybody that the podcast is on Spotify. And there is a new Apple feed. You simply have to search for Pop Culture Affidavit in Apple Music and on Spotify, and you'll see it there with the Deeds Not Words logo and everything. Now, the uncollecting. As you know, I've been spending the last 6 years making some sort of effort to go through and get rid of the unused media that I own. It's ebbed and flowed and really ebbed. And if you want the blow-by-blow of it all, you can go over to theuncollecting.com. That's where I post reviews / evaluations of what I watch and read and give you all monthly updates as to how far along I've gotten. This year, I've tried to be a little more intentional with it, and that's by giving myself, well, intentions. There are 5 of them. First, I'm going to buy nothing old, i.e. rent, stream, or borrow any back issue book or movie instead on my list that I don't own. And at least a couple of my list have where I can find some of the things that I have been wanting to watch or read. And a lot of it involves a service that I already subscribed to or my local library. Number 2 is to set a short box limit for my comics. In other words, I'm going to call my collection to the point where it can all be contained. And then when it starts to get over that containment, I'll cull it again. 3, focus on, well, experiences instead of stuff. This might be everything from like a nice dinner or a weekend away with my wife or a trip to one of the art museums in the area or something that involves us going out but not bringing things in. Number 4, consciously reduce. Which is kind of the whole point of this uncollecting thing, but really, like, you know, what can I start to get rid of as I kind of like downsize before actually downsizing? And then finally, keep myself honest, which again, the uncollecting will help with. But I often get kind of neglectful of tracking and then forget to add things to the collection and just a bunch of other things that I can mention. I want to make sure that I'm tracking myself a little bit more thoroughly and a little more diligently than I have in the past. So with that in mind, I've decided to make this episode not focused on a pop culture piece regarding uncollecting as I've done for the last 3, but to make this episode a conversation. So along with me for that conversation will be a special guest, Professor Allen. And we will get to that right after this. Stick around.
Back in 1940, 8 sensational heroes united to create the world's very first superhero team, the Justice Society of America. Now, 85 years later, we're gathering podcasters and bloggers from around the globe for a month-long celebration in an event we're calling JS April. Throughout April 2025, join dozens of all-star podcasters and bloggers as they each share their own unique tributes to the original and greatest superhero team, covering exciting topics like
Superman Family Number 211, October 1981.
Mr. and Mrs. Superman attend the wedding of Batman and Catwoman.
JSA Number 1 from 2024.
JSA 68 through 72.
All-Star Comics Number 58.
JSA Number 59 from 2004.
Justice League of America 171.
And Justice League of America 172.
The Legacy of the JSA Character Names.
The Brave and the Bold Number 61.
The Golden Age Wonder Woman JSA Adventures.
JLA, JSA, Virtue and Vice 2002.
DC Special Number 29 featuring the Untold Origin of the Justice Society.
Infinity Inc. Annual Number 1. JSA Number 38. And the Stargirl TV series.
Justice Society of America Number 6 from 1993.
Justice Society of America Number 20.
Justice Society of America Annual Number 1, 2008.
Justice Society of America Number 10 from 2007.
All-Star Comics Number 4 from 1941.
The Wonder Woman Spectacular from 1978.
Celebrate with JSA 85th birthday cookies.
The 1987 Infinity Inc. and Outsiders specials.
Wanted, the world's most dangerous villains Number 6 from 1973.
The recent Alan Scott Green Lantern miniseries.
Examining the role of the Justice Society in the crisis.
And the effect the crisis had on the team.
More Fun Comics 55 from 1940.
Contrasting the Justice Society of America versus Marvel's Invaders.
In Post-Crisis, how the JSA inspired the JLA.
Justice League of America Number 29 through 30, plus The Flash Number 123.
Golden Age Origins Number 1.
Showcase number 97 to 99 from 1978.
The Justice Society versus Extant.
All-Star Squadron, issues 19 and 20 from 1983.
All-Star Comics, issues 60 to 63.
JSA number 56 through number 58 from 2004.
JSA, the Liberty File.
Justice Society of America, thy kingdom come.
And that's just some of the topics that will be covered during the celebration. Get ready for a thrilling month of beloved characters, fascinating insights, and incredible stories. Follow the action on social media with the hashtag JSApril. And visit our website for a complete list of participating podcasters, bloggers, and what they're each covering at fireandwaterpodcast.com/JSApril.
So my guess this time around for our fourth foray into uncollecting is somebody who I really couldn't think of anybody else to have on this podcast for this topic, mainly because he's the only person who actually pays attention to this whole thing. But he's also the person you want when you're talking about economics and collecting and also being cheap. Live from Latveria via the quarter bin, here is Professor Allen.
Hello, Tom. It is always good to be here.
Yes.
Now, before we get going too far on this topic, I think we just need to come to an understanding, and that's that I'm not going to bill you for the therapy that I'm going to offer you, and just you don't bill me. Okay, let's just reciprocal. Okay, we're cool, right?
That's therapy in the quarter bin, isn't it?
Exactly. Yes. Yes. But you could still deduct the full amount off your taxes. No,
that is true. What? Exactly. In fact, I have to do my taxes. I was filling out a financial aid form today, like one of the ones that you fill out.
Oh, yeah. You've got a breath that's just that age.
Oh,
don't
my
you?
Gosh. And I had forgotten, like, we went about halfway and we stopped because we were just like, let's finish this tomorrow. Because, again, you're digging up, like, I got it. Like, what did I pay for this house? And, like, What is the balance of my retirement? I'm even like, how much is the balance on my pension right now? You know, like that, all this. I'm like, I don't know. You're not going to give me money anyway. So like, why am I trying? But yeah. So anyway, yes. I have a almost to college senior in high school and it is scary.
Mercy me.
Yeah. They have more stuff than I am. Than I do. They have so much crap. And you know, I was telling you as I am, before we started recording here, that I'm sitting in my wife's office, which she has a really nice setup because she works from home,
And across from me is like two bookcases full of actual like print actual books, comics mm-hmm. or actual books. You know what? Mm-hmm. Prose novels, poetry, this stuff. The comic books and graphic novels, trades and all that are downstairs in the basement. Yeah. I'm looking at this and I'm like, it's overflowing. And I'm like, I'm right now I'm even like, I can get rid of that one. I can get rid of that one. And like all that's going to be left are like five Star Trek novels and a copy of the DC Comics style guide at this point. But no, it's interesting. And you have the never ending topic of like collectible organizing.
Yep. I mean, you and I we've been kicking this back and forth. Must be. I mean, I guess you did this what 6-7 years ago. You started your process, and we may have started talking a little bit about it.
I said it
before that in those grand days of Turok Dinosaur Hunter.
Yes, and I seem to remember you, me, and Mike Bailey having a conversation about this.
That sounds about right. Yep.
Yeah, and I don't think we're the only people who.
No.
Do it. Because I've heard, you know, you and I have been listening to podcasts. We've been podcasting for a very long time, but we've been listening to these podcasts of geek things for, I mean, for me, it's, I think I started when Brett was a baby. So really, it was.
That would be your high school senior.
Yes. This, we're talking like 17, 18 years ago at this point. I've heard the conversation of like, what are we going to do with this stuff? And you know, like, how long do you hold on to it for? And I don't know. Like, I mean,
First off, you've come up with the greatest branding. The reason I follow you is because you came up with the phrase uncollecting, which is so awesome. Just thinking about, you know, prepping for this, I love the fact that in this conversation, we are sort of at two different stages of life. You know, I don't remember exactly. I think we may be more than 10 years apart. You know, my next birthday will click my age over to one that starts with a 6.
We are 12 years apart. I will be 48.
I think we'll have some similar experiences, but we're actually going to have some, I think, some different viewpoints because of that.
Yeah.
So I've been looking forward to this conversation ever since you proposed it.
Yeah. The people know about like my experience because I've been journaling this on and off. I'm not the most consistent person when it comes to it, but I've been trying to do more and more with it. And there are good days and bad days, I guess you could say. I mean, it's an ebb and flow. So she's like, what's been your experience with like trying to cull things, you know, be cheesy about what you're buying, whatnot, and uncollect things like, you know.
Well, you know, broadly, we were fortunate in that this whole concept was something that struck M when they were in their teens. Hmm. So you've talked about some of it, you know, Clean Sweep, Peter Walsh, and all that stuff, which must be 20 some years ago. Pushing now, although again, just to give you our cred here as Middletons, the three of us, me, Em, and Valerie, went to see Peter Walsh speak in 2019, I think it was, in support of his book Let It Go.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, so again, we come by this this whole topic honestly. But within us, I mean, if Valerie had her way, we'd never throw anything out. If I had my way, we would throw everything out. So M has actually taught us and trained us along the way. I remember one of the books that they found somewhere in their early to mid-teens was by a mother-daughter team called the Morgensterns.
Okay.
And I think the mother, you know, had done some organizing and, you know, then brought in the teen daughter to do the, you know, organizing for teens, you know.
Gotcha. Okay.
And the one thing I remember from them, which we have utilized for organizing, is the acronym SPACE. Ooh. SPACE, which is sort, purge, assign a home, SPAC for containerize, and then E for equalize. And one of the things I like about that is we sometimes, our first impulse is to containerize.
Yeah.
That's sometimes the first impulse, not in the decollecting side, but in the organizing side. Mm-hmm. But I like that that one actually puts purging or the uncollecting process yeah. as like the second stage of the five-stage plan.
Yeah. It's interesting because behind me is the office closet, and in there is my comic collection, which is all mm-hmm. it's overflowing from all the short boxes. and I have gotten rid of – actually, I purged a bunch of books back in December.
Nice.
But behind that are just some bins and banker boxes and stuff. Okay. And, you know, I think your point about containerizing, especially when you're younger and in your, say, your teens, especially your 20s, when, I speak from being in my 20s 25 years ago, right? But my experience is that you don't stay in the same place for a very long time when you're in your 20s, and very right. often you end up true. Moving true. Two or three times. And I think before, and we moved, yeah, we moved a couple of times, and we had, this is our second house, and we had moved here in here about 10 years ago. But I remember there are boxes in there, or there were before I started cleaning some things out, that just kind of moved with us. Because it's contained, yes. like yep. it's yep. in a, you yep. don't need to purge it. It's just like you just put it somewhere, and then it mm-hmm. it gets kind of forgotten because you didn't need to sort through it. It was already a box. You could throw it on the truck mm-hmm. or in the car, and then that's it. So it's interesting that the purge comes first because that makes a lot more sense. Yeah, my thing is with, and we are going to get into some of the. You know, kind of both the psychological and economic aspects of this,
yes.
which kind of dovetail, like, or there's a Venn diagram, because I was thinking of sometimes when you go through some things and you're trying to purge, there's like levels of guilt, or maybe that's just me.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah.
Yep. The way I did. Where there's either like one or two things. It's either like there is a memory attached to it
mm-hmm.
or, mm-hmm. you know, you've had this for 25, like stuff from high school. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right. Right.
And I was able to throw a lot of that stuff out because I just like scanned it or something or took pictures mm-hmm. of it or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But like, you know, like why did I have my cap and gown from my high school graduation? And I had saved it.
Mm-hmm.
afterward mm-hmm. and it just moved with me and that sort of thing. And my college graduation one I actually was using because I
right for sure
mm-hmm. you know and now mm-hmm. but now I have my master's
oh right room, right
so, mm-hmm. So I got rid of the bachelor's one but like you know there's the memory attached to it. It's like so and so gave this to me or right. whatever and it's like
I have one thing to say about that. Just mm-hmm. you hit on a word that struck me, and that is this idea of being bound because someone gave you something.
Mm-hmm.
And as I like to say, you give gifts. You don't give burdens.
Mm-hmm.
If that thing is a burden to you at this point, it wasn't when you received it. Yeah, then it true. Wasn't a gift. And you're allowed to say it's not a gift anymore.
Yeah. No, that's a really good point, too. Because I also think about, aside from the sentimental things, I don't know if this is your case. No, I've been married for 21 years now, and I know you've been married for longer.
You know what we call that, Tom? A cute little start.
Yeah.
Oh.
But
newlyweds.
And I don't know. if you still, if this phenomenon applies to you, we have a couple of things that we still use that were wedding gifts. Our waffle iron, for instance, 21-year-old waffle iron. I use it, right? And we have a wine cabinet, like certain things that were gifted to us. And then we have like, I have a fondue set.
Yeah.
I think we've used it a couple of times. It's sitting up in a box up in like the back of a cabinet in the kitchen. Yeah. And it's interesting that like you have those things that like you have the really useful things and you have those things that, again, they're just out of sight and they are literally out of mind.
Mm-hmm. And I imagine, well, you probably don't remember who gave you the fondue set. If you do remember, you might not be in touch with them 21 years later. They're probably not coming over every Thursday evening for fondue.
No.
It would not break their hearts for you to give that away.
Yeah. Yeah. This is, and you know, on some level, I take after my parents on this. My parents have a this is funny because we were up at my parents a couple years from Christmas, and my mom doesn't drink coffee. My dad will just drink instant coffee, but they have one of those, and you probably can picture it. It's a percolator that you plug in the percolator pot, and you just put the water in, and then you put the grounds to the top.
Yep.
And I said, where did you get this? They're like, yeah, this was an engagement present. My parents got married in 1971, and they're still using stuff. My mom has Tupperware that is older than I am.
I was about to say that what you are describing sounds like it needs to go in an avocado-colored kitchen, exactly. And I think I nailed that.
Yeah. My mother has – well, and it's funny because we every once in a while, like we don't really buy anything when we go to like these antique malls or like thrift stores, but we like to look around and
– yep.
60s and 70s era and early 80s era Corningware, Pyrex, all that stuff is becoming collectible. And I've come across them like my mother had those bowls. I'm just like, geez. The other thing, though, is go ahead.
If you're using something, there's no shame in keeping it.
Oh, no,
obviously.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
Well, especially if it's like, because, you know, I hate to use the cliche of they don't make things like they used to, but there are certain things that, like, are hard to replace with something that is a newer version that holds up to it. Yep. And I can't think of an example off the top of my head, if I'm completely honest with you. But there
are. But it's the sort of thing that is not sold for cheap on Amazon. Let's just put it that way.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you weirdly have a few investment pieces that you didn't realize were investment pieces until
you
broke out the Corningware thing again and things like that. But there's an economic side of this too, because there's like forgive me if I'm using the phrase wrong, but like is it called the sunk cost fallacy?
Absolutely.
The idea that you've spent all this money and you know you have to keep using it or something and. But at the same time, you spent the money. Like getting rid of it is not going to get the money back.
Exactly. that is a decent explanation of the sunk cost fallacy. Mm-hmm. You know, for a literature teacher.
Thank you. Your condescension is just dripping through the Skype call here.
Yeah, but the idea is that when you're making a decision, that money that you have already spent, whether you take the left path of the Y or the right path of the fork in the road, either way you go, you've already spent that money. So spending that money should not affect your decision going forward. Now, I will say always, and this applied to what we were talking about before, and that is and I think this is important, at least, you know, for some geeks to hear, and that's that relationships don't count as sunk costs.
No.
You know, if you've made commitments to friends or family or spouses, or if your mother-in-law gave you that flower vase, even though it's ugly, you're allowed to break it out whenever she comes over. That's okay, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you can't just blow those off as sunk costs.
There's a limit.
Even to us introverted loser geeks, yeah. Sometimes relationships matter.
No, there's a limit to those things, but yeah, sure.
Well, because but let me
go ahead.
Give you a very practical, sort of silly example that I was thinking about just today, and that is that for me, it is very difficult for me to stop reading a book partway through, even when I'm not enjoying it. And even if I have the strong sense that I will continue to not enjoy it.
Same.
So that's a silly example of a sunk cost, right? And it's an example of me falling, being victimized by the sunk cost fallacy. Just because I'm 3 hours into a book, that does not mean I have to spend another six finishing it up, but I do. That is me. So that makes us, sort of a small example. You know, the types of things that we might talk about later are, obviously a lot more expensive than a book, more time consuming than a book. But that would be an example. Like, I have sunk 3 hours into this. Gosh darn it. I'm going to finish this off, even if there are a million better ways to spend the next 6 hours. That would be more productive, more enjoyable, more life-giving, more joyous. But I'm going to finish reading this stupid book, Tom.
Isn't that what psychologists call an overbearing sense of commitment?
That's it.
No, I'm the same way. Now, Amanda can just drop a book. She's like, I don't want to read this anymore.
That's a skill.
That is a skill, because I am like there have been times where I can drop a book if I'm early enough in the book, like maybe a few chapters in, and I'm like, this is just not good, and I can put it away. But like, we're talking like fewer than 50 pages.
Yeah.
Like, I just right off the bat, I'm like, no. But if I'm 50, 100 pages in, I'm like you. I'm like, I need to keep going. I've already gotten this far. Why don't I just finish this out?
I mean, there was a time. We're not as bad as this now, I don't think. But I mean, there would be times when we would, Valerie and I would decide at the start of a TV season, okay, are we in for Survivor this year? Or are we in for American Idol? Because once we start, we're not going to stop. Like we can stop a season. Like, we don't have to watch every season.
Yeah.
But it's like, if we're watching episode one, we're going to be watching the live finale in 6 months.
Yeah.
So is that a commitment we want to make now?
Sometimes reality shows like that give you an out, especially if it's something like, that has like breaks in between segments of the season.
Right.
So like, am I going to come back to this? No. TV shows actually tend to be like that too. I remember one of my favorite shows of the early 2000s was Alias with Jennifer Garner.
Yes. Yeah.
But the last season, we like abandoned a few episodes in because it was just kind of a mess. And I know the ratings were in the toilet, and she actually was off the show for a little bit because I think she was pregnant. And so we never got back to it. And I ended up, this is back in the days when Netflix was like mostly DVDs.
I rented
the DVDs, and I was like, you know what? I just want to finish this. Now, there are other shows that I'm like, I'm never going to, like The Flash. I never finished The Flash. I got maybe one season past Crisis on Infinite Earths, and it was like that Mirror Master storyline. And I liked the actors and everything who had been replacing some of the other actors, but I was just like, this is just getting tedious. So
I think there's a lesson there that maybe we can apply to other parts of our lifetime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I do want to give one caveat, and that is that I've talked about some of this previously over on the Relatively Geeky Network, and but really for the last 6 months or so, I've really tried to be intentional about all of this stuff, and that is certainly informed by the fact that my father passed away about 2.5 years ago now, and my father-in-law has had his situation change at the facility that he's been at for the last few years. So we have been the recipients of downsizing, if you will. We have some of their stuff in
oh, really?
both fathers, some of their stuff in our house now, and we've been going through that, and so so that will probably inform a lot of what I'm thinking about, and there may be references and stories from my father or father-in-law as we go about this.
Yeah, actually, and we will circle around back to this later on, because my Amanda lost her dad a year and a half ago, and my parents are still alive, but my dad turns 80 in a couple of months.
Yep.
So you are thinking about it a little bit, and that is, you're right. It is
gonna, if I can ask, are they in their own home? Are they still in a house?
They have been in that house for 50 years.
That's wonderful. My dad was able to live in his house until his dying day, and that was wonderful for him. Of course, it meant that the downsizing had to take place afterwards, but that has to take place either on one side or the other.
So to my parents' credit, they take a lot of pride in the house. My dad has renovated and re-renovated, and they've had things put on. And they have stuff, but like, it's not getting to the point where like more and more stuff is coming in. Like they're kind of like, you know, we have enough. And every once in a while they get rid of stuff. So like they'll call us up and be like, okay, here's this pile of books. Here's this, like, they got rid of their record collection a number of years ago.
That's great.
My mom sent me an Excel spreadsheet. She was just like, pick the things and we'll set them aside. And a lot of, you know, I didn't have that many. I grabbed my Sesame Street records from when I was a kid. I grabbed a few of, like, they had some good stuff. Like my mom had a couple of very old Beatles albums and the Mamas and the Papas, and but they were both like, I don't have any interest in Streisand albums, and like, you know, I kind of wish I did take that Carpenters album, but I mean, but for the most part I got maybe seven or eight records out of it. It was pretty good.
Perfect.
You know, and then they purged the rest. And like, you know, what's cool about that sort of stuff is that there are perhaps in your area too, there are places where you can donate these things that aren't just like the local Goodwill.
Right.
For instance, books, records, DVDs, I will all donate to the library.
Oh, great.
And they have the Friends of the Library sale every 6 months. And I, of course, go and I buy more crap. But I rolled up and you know, the first section you go to in the Friends for the Library sale is all the way in the back. It is the science fiction paperbacks and horror, science fiction and horror paperback, because like everything else is like, this is all the stuff that's been out of print for years. It's always the section I go to in a used bookstore, and I'm going through it. And I came across a book. I'm like, I'm pretty sure that's the copy that I donated.
Yep.
So, but okay, so like going back and you are purging and stuff like that, and whether it's because my sister was over for Christmas, and she's like, because we're gonna get the house when they pass, right? Unless they become like ambulatory speaking, they can't live in the house,
right?
You know. And my sister's like, what would we do? Because neither of us have their taste in furniture or decor. And she's like, I don't want to live there. And I said, I'm 8 hours away. I said, Nancy, it's called an estate sale. Yeah. You sell everything that's not nailed to the floor. She was like, oh, it's like, yeah. But you know, kind of going into this and doing the purging, and especially when it's yours, like, I fall into the trap of overthinking everything, which should come as a shock to nobody.
With Tom Panners?
Yeah. But then I'm sitting there doing, like, sometimes, especially with things that I have had for a long time, and I'm like,
there's like, it's like you're doing a cost benefit analysis in your head every single time you pick up that, oh, well, like, you know, the, this, that, like you said, and, I don't have a solution for, you know, figuring that out, like a formula to work for, because I can't seem to find the right groove with that. I mean, have you had any luck making the decisions a little quicker?
You know, there's a, no, but there's something to be said for Marie Kondo and sparking joy. Mm-hmm. One of the things I like about that is that that's kind of a high standard, actually. Though, again, it might be my cold, dead heart, but at least that's actually a high standard for me. Though you have to go into that process really desiring to purge a certain amount.
Mm-hmm.
There's just not an easy answer to that other than deciding from my in-laws when they father-in-law when he had to move, we got his bookcase.
Mm-hmm.
He, talking about books, and you know, we ended up with, you know, 50, 60 extra books here, and a couple of them we kept, you know, put on our own reading list. Some we took to the library,
mm-hmm.
but it got to the point where we just said, okay, well, this weekend, let's find 10 books in the house to give away or to do something with, to get rid of. And there's some value in starting small, I think, or having a manageable goal. I think that's part of what overwhelms my wife sometimes, is that you know, her goal is to go through all of the pictures and, you know, all the photographs we have.
Yeah.
Well, no, that's going to take a summer. Mm-hmm. But this weekend we can go through this box, or we can, you know, make some small progress, or find, you know, 10 books or 3 pairs of shoes or whatever it is. And there's some, I can't remember where I ran into the idea, but that is, you know, throw something out every day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that could be as simple as the jar of pickles that expired at the start of COVID, or, you know, or a pair of shoes or whatever it is, you know, but if you make that part of a life habit.
Yeah. And the food thing is tough, because I think everybody has a jar of pickles. You know, like, and there's like a jar of something in the back of your fridge, and you're just like, this has been sitting there since this is like a decade old. And you feel,
Tom, one thing I've learned, that if you can't read the expiration date because it's rubbed off, it's probably because it's expired.
Well, and then you kind of feel bad for wasting food, you know, and again, it comes back to guilt, which again is just like a huge thing that I am literally talking to my therapist about, my actual therapist and not you.
What?
But you know, I think about that, and I think about, I've always loved the Marie Kondo approach, and I loved her, some of her organizing tips. Like, I literally do fold my t-shirts the way that she like had you folding them, because I'm like, oh, you fit a lot more in there. And like, t-shirts are a thing that I actually have too many of. And then, you know, the first wave of the purge, mm-hmm. of it is easy, because you pick the things that are damaged, right?
Right.
And you're like,
right,
this has too many holes in it, or it's too stretched out, or it's just, there's, you know, God, there's like paint stains on it from when I was painting the bedroom or something. And yeah, and that, those are the easy ones to get rid of, right? And I don't need to turn them into rags, because I have so many dust rags. I don't need more dust rags. So I just, like, you know, you get rid of them. And if you can find a place that will recycle those sorts of things, sure, I recommend doing it. But if not, you just kind of have to throw it in the trash. But then comes the stuff that's in better condition, and it is the sparking joy. And then, like, and you come across something because in the act of purging, you're cleaning very often, right?
Right.
And
right.
organizing, especially things like clothes or books or collectibles. And you come across a sweater you haven't worn in a long time. And you're like, because it probably got shoved back.
Yeah.
Et cetera. And then you're just like, well, should I wear this? And then, like, you know, then there's that decision. But I guess the question is, like, what's your statute of limitations on something that you barely use? Like, this could be that fondue set or the fact that I have a working Atari 2600 down in my basement and I don't play it as often as I probably could.
Whoa.
I ain't getting rid of that.
We draw a line there. Is pride. Yeah, is a sort of pride.
No. I have so many video game consoles. I'm not getting rid of them until, like, you know, the time actually has to come where we're like, oh, shit, we do need to get rid of this.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard from organizers, and I don't buy this, that if you haven't, you know, worn a piece of clothing in a year, you don't need it. Mm. I think that's probably a bit much. I mean, a bit too soon to make that call. But there's something there. 3 years, 5 years, yeah. Figure out if you can't remember the last time,
yeah.
Or I'm not judging my wife. Never worn it. No, actually, she does not do that. But we know people.
Yeah, yeah.
Of all genders who will fall into that.
You know,
buy a piece of clothing that they never that they never wear. And you know part of the problem on the purging side is the purchasing side, mm-hmm. obviously. You know, as an academic in the business field, I would love it if people made purchases on a purely rational basis. It would make personal finance a lot easier, and corporate finance and economics to just make those fields so much easier. But we don't do that. And even cold-hearted accountants like myself, you know, we purchase things often for the same reasons that we eat sometimes, right? Because of guilt.
Stress.
Sadness, stress. Boredom.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Ennui, or to celebrate, or because we're happy, we're joyous.
Yeah.
You know, just like so many aspects of life, purchasing stuff is a decision packed with emotions.
Yeah. And I find that too, because I'm working my way out of a fair amount of debt, and I find it was like, yeah, there's a sort of, it's not a manic thing, but it's like there's a dopamine rush you get.
Yeah.
And I can certainly feel it, especially when it's like, hey, I just got paid and I can, you know.
Right. Right. Yep.
Go blow all this money on stuff that I like, do I really need to buy that, you know, or just like food, you know, takeout and things like that, where it's like,
right.
So,
one great, piece of advice that I actually recently heard was that, you know, the problem is because of online and Amazon, et cetera, we can buy faster.
Yes.
Than ever before. My comic shop or in stock trades, whatever it is. And one practical bit of advice that I liked, someone who does talk about personal finance, to separate by time. I would like 72 hours, 48 would be great. At least try 24. Separate between putting an item into the shopping cart and checking out.
Huh.
If you separate those two things by a day or two, you'd be surprised how many of those things you may end up not buying, because 2 days later, maybe I don't need that, whatever, you know, fill in the blank, whatever it is that was so exciting to me just a couple of days ago.
I have done that before, and Amazon, and I don't actually, I'm reducing the amount that I buy on Amazon on general principle because of Jeff Bezos. But the other thing at Amazon at least did have a, that would help is you are allowed to create lists. I would just essentially have a kind of a want to get or interested in getting shopping mm-hmm. list where I'm not. So it didn't go into the cart. It went onto the list.
Right.
And then if I remembered, it was there. So I think my most recent purchases that were not Christmas gifts, and I did really try to avoid Amazon over Christmas, but, you know, ended up having to. It was the only place I could get a few things. Were fairly practical yeah. and needed of some sort, like they were needed in a way that I needed to get them quick. So there was right. a necessity.
Right.
But I'm also of the and comic books is actually one of the better things for me of this is I've been very committed to just buying. In like physical presence of buying comics, I will go on eBay mm-hmm. or my comic shop every once in a while when I'm like,
yeah,
I really do need to grab this book. Cause I'm doing it for a podcast or whatever. And I can't find it online. And I think what helps too, and I don't buy as many trades as I used to. And I think what helps partially is that I have subscriptions to the big twos,
right.
streaming yep. services for comics. And dude, I read the entire Legion of Superheroes from like right before, like from like the first issue of Superboy and Legion of Superheroes they had all the way up to Zero Hour. And I,
that's awesome.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
I don't think I had to grab a single physical comic book for, right. even though I have the Great Darkness Saga, trade paperback and I have a couple of random Legion issues. But yeah, I had always wanted to read 5 years later, but I was like, well, let me just go all the way back. And then I got on the reading order thing. And I'm like, okay, what do I read here? And it was fun as hell. Kind of like how I read through the entire Claremont X-Men run through the essential volumes and then,
right.
and then what, and then plugged in what I couldn't on Marvel Unlimited. And I think having that where I can access runs of books that I've loved for years or characters I've loved for years that I've never read, like Batman and, you know, the X-Men and stuff. And I'm paying a subscription fee for it, but at least it's, right.
but that's a fundamentally different
yeah.
way of experiencing mm-hmm. Products that this idea of both digital versus physical
yeah.
or do we need to own something or do we need just to have access to it? And, you know, I see both arguments
mm-hmm.
in terms of, you know, you put all your money on, I sold all my books and put everything on the Barnes and Noble Nook. Oops. Right. Or
yeah.
whatever it is. Right. Whatever yeah. the online services that shuts yeah. down. So, you know, you run that risk. Mm-hmm. I think we are moving towards a use/licensing world.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what, you know, that's what the rideshare services yeah. are. And as examples,
which frustrates me because I have a fair amount of physical media and I find the physical media purchases I make sometimes do tend toward the, I want this in a physical copy. Like I can be discerning.
Right.
So certain movies are yeah. a great example of that. There are a lot of movies I will just flat out stream in the same way that yeah, back sure. in the day I would see if I could catch them on cable or tape them off TV or mm-hmm. something, right? So yep. that's yep. how I treat streaming. It's just like a fancier version of cable TV from back when we were younger.
I like that. I like that.
Books, I really am any format on books. I listen to fewer audiobooks than I read because I tend to zone out while listening to audiobooks. So
mm-hmm.
Most of the audiobooks I will listen to are usually like plays. So when mm-hmm. I have to do Shakespeare,
mm-hmm. right.
read along. But ebooks, now I'm
at, do those tend to be, you know, a dry recitation or are they performances?
I will download like the Folger Shakespeare Library, which is the Folger Theater out of DC, and it's a full cast performance. Mm-hmm. So you are like, and what I will do is I will read if I have to do it for like work or something, I will sit there with Amanda's copy of the Norton Shakespeare, that she's had since her undergrad days. It's sitting in our living room on the shelf with the copy of
Crime and
Punishment and a couple of Paradise Lost and a couple of other, you know, notable books. And I'll read there. I'll read in the Norton Shakespeare and I will follow along with the play. And that just helps me with my reading comprehension of Shakespeare because it's drama and you need to see it or hear it. But ebooks, so I have a Kindle app on my iPad. I like ebooks, but there's a limit that I can read because either my eyes start to get very strained or I start to read too quickly. So so I tend toward the physical copies, and I've been using the library more and more.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, you know, we were raised, Middletons have always been library people. And so, I mean, that's just an example of, you know, coming up on 60 years now, Tom, with the concept of I can take this book, I can read it, I can give it back.
Yeah, I've got a couple of.
And so, you know, so I think if we're okay thinking about our music and our movies and other things in that same library way, I think that might be helpful.
Yeah. Well, I'm music wise, I still have an iPod. I have an iPod Touch. I'm not giving up. I am going to, I replaced the battery in it a couple of years ago because I am not giving that thing up. I have days of music downloaded onto it. I like I like having a separate device. I don't want to listen to music on my phone. I like having a separate device because I can just take that with me, you know, whatever I podcast and music and I will stream over Spotify, but no, I haven't bought a CD. The only CDs I have bought in the last like it's gotta be 15 years at this point are from people who I know who are in bands. So like my friend has a band up on Long Island. In fact, I just pre-ordered, they have a, they have a new EP coming out and I just pre-ordered it cause I'm like, I'm going to support you.
Right.
Even though I can stream all your music, I know that you're going to make money off of me buying your CD and the record. And there are some records that I absolutely want, you know. Now, I am a cheap ass, and I will rarely, if ever, buy a record at its full price. So most of my record collection is pretty beat up because I've hunted in the $2 bin, the $3, you know, the $3 back sale. Of old beat up copy or whatever. And I have a few new ones that I got again. They make physical media still makes great gifts.
That's and true.
When people ask you what you want for Christmas, you're like, you know, you really are like, I have way too much stuff. But at the same time, it's like, I can put a few books up on a list for you and you can buy them. Comics though, it's interesting. Like there are certain comics I want in physical and then I will read. And I'm purging more and more. And I feel like there's like a permanent collection of comics that I have, mostly the Wolfman Paris Titan stuff. and those like, and certain runs that like, I don't think I'll ever give up the Nam books. I was, the funny thing when I first started buying that series before I even started In Country, I found a lot of it in my LCS. And I think it was Atlas at the time. And, I think they were like 50 cents a piece. They were really, really cheap. They were either cover price or whatever. So I got them for like, I got a ton of them for like $20. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to collect the run of this and I'm just going to sell it on eBay, the whole thing. And then I got really into it and everything. I'm like, I'm never, I've had copies signed. You know, I'm never getting
rid of them.
And I went and collected an entire run of Conan the King. And I'm like, I don't want to get rid of that.
I worked hard on
it. But then there's like random... This and this is what's frustrating. Random independent miniseries, things that won't sell and not a lot of people necessarily want, you know, because it was like a random series by a random publisher and it was like pretty good. But I'm like, I'm never really going to reread this. And I've thrown a few away into the recycling bin here and there if I can't get rid of them. I feel a little guilty for saying that.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. We've got Half Price Books chain, some locations around here, and they'll take comics.
Oh, that's cool.
And you know, you just take a stack and you get a couple bucks. You know, I wouldn't take a one up because they'd say that's 6 cents, and that would just, you know, humiliate me. But you know, if I take 20 up and they give me, you know, $2.25, I somehow feel better about myself.
Yeah.
All right, you know, I'll throw in comics and I'll make sure I throw in a book, so maybe bumps it up 75 cents and I don't feel so bad. But also there are to me, again, it's, you know, sometimes the types of comics that I'm looking to read, which are at this point just reading copies.
Yeah.
And so if I've no shame in a being the last person to ever read this specific issue as it falls apart in my hands. You know, as the cover tears off, or that middle 4-page spread
falls out,
gets loose from the staple because it's a 57-year-old issue of Sad Sack.
The cover is like brittle.
So I know how that brittle is the one. Yep. So I no shame in the literal recycling of some of my comic books.
Well, and with DC and Marvel. In some cases, when you find like a really beat up old copy of something that you know of, especially like a genre book that you know they're not going to put up, like honestly, like I will grab like a GI Combat or a Sergeant.
There
Rock.
Are so few war books on that DC app. It's
and they're like maybe a dollar, depending on what you're getting, and I'm like, I'll grab this. You know, Kaniger Kubert War book for a little, you know, for a couple of bucks and such. Or like, I have a collection of Classics Illustrated. It's not huge, but I have a lot of old Classics Illustrated comics that are there. They're in terrible shape.
Yeah.
And
it's possible I've sent you.
Yeah, I think so. And actually, I have the, I have to take an inventory and see which ones I'm missing, but I am getting pretty close to collecting that entire Prestige format line they did in the early 90s. I could think Comics.
Yes, that's right.
Because I found those now. Some of them aren't in the best shape, but I found a few of them for really, really cheap. Got a couple signed. John K. Snyder III signed The Spy, I think it's called, The Secret Agent or something by he wrote Joseph Conrad. And Joe Staton signed my Christmas Carol. The coolest one, believe it or not, and if you ever come across this and it's cheap, I recommend picking up Moby Dick, done by Bill Sienkiewicz.
Yes, I've heard
really
of that.
Good.
I don't know if I've seen that.
Yeah, if you ever come across that, I recommend that. But yeah, so like those sorts of things, you know, I'll hold on to. And if they fall apart, you're right. Like, who really? Really cares. So that's one of the other reasons that, like, when I go through short boxes, like, nobody's going to buy these because that Conan the King collection, many of them are beat up.
Sure.
Water damaged.
And, I mean, that's also maybe to work in a little, work our way back into the financing of things. If you've only sunk 50 cents, a dollar, $2 into a comic book or a book, you know, used paperback, it's a lot easier to give it away or get rid of it than if you bought it new for, you know, hardcover first edition for $75 or whatever it would be.
Yeah. I mean, and you and I both have we both celebrate Free Comic Book Day.
Absolutely.
Which I'm kind of
once together.
Yes. Once together, much to Stella's chagrin. I'm kind of curious as to how much it's going on, because I know Diamond did distribute most of that stuff.
Ooh, that's a good point.
I hadn't
even thought about those consequences.
I was at my LCS last Friday picking up like the one book that I had in my box that week because it was an off week, and Previews was out, and the Anna who was behind the counter was like, this is probably the last one ever. I was like, man, like I told her I was buying Preview. I was getting Previews back in the early 90s. And she was saying, I said, was there anything that I have to change in Comic Hub? And she said, no. She was looking at my pull list. She's like, no, everything you have, the minute it happened, they went to other
distributors.
Yeah,
they figured out. Yeah,
they have a, I mean, that store has been in business for a very, very long time, and it's changed hands a couple of times, right. And now it's actually a different name and a new location, which is huge. And if you ever come, if you ever come again,
absolutely, I like the old Atlas.
Yeah, so it's called Hello Comics, and what they did, they bought the space they bought used to be a Taekwondo studio, so it is an enormous store. Like Bailey was with me last year around this time. And he, Stella, and I hung out for a little bit at the store, and he just kind of walked around. It was like, you could tell he's like, I want to buy something and I have money, but like, it's like the kid in Toys R Us with $100. You're like, I don't know what to get. Yeah,
where do I start?
Yeah. So I love going there, but yeah, she was saying how that's the case, but they also twice a year do, Free Comic Book Day. And they usually do it around Thanksgiving weekend, quarter bin sales.
Good.
Nice. And it's just long box after long box after long box, just out on the patio. And you could see the old school dorks, because we're all like flip, like really quickly flipping through a long box. And then we're like
ferret, badger, Turok.
Yeah, pretty much Turok. Hey, that's how I got most of Star Slayers.
That's right. Hey, that's it.
But then there's like the guy coming next to you, like, okay, let's switch.
Rotate.
You do it, and you do it at comic conventions too. that's the fun, and I don't never feel guilty buying those, because you're right. It's like, because a lot of them are, there's a reason they're 25 cents.
Yeah.
And yep. So, you know, the thing I'm talking to Valerie with the I want to do everything at once. I think a lot of us get in our heads, and I. Want to say this happens to those of us who were good students in school. We feel that we have to have something to show for what our effort is.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in the same way that, like, you know, when you do something and it's not readily visible to the change, not like readily visible to somebody else, you're like, is it even worth it? Even though that's a very stupid way to think. Like, for instance, You and I own a house, right? Mm-hmm. Now, this house was built in 1989. We've painted, right? We've done major stuff, but the major stuff has been the totally unsexy stuff. We replaced the HVAC. We had all the pipes replaced.
Yeah.
Which, like, in homeowner-wise, is really freaking smart, especially since those pipes were really old, and they were like, yeah, you had great timing because these were about to go. So,
and your neighbors might remember it.
Yeah.
but no one else. Yeah. It is not a visible remod of the kitchen.
Yeah, exactly. And so there's, I think there's that pressure, and there's all sorts of sources in the pressure. I joke that we used to be good students in school, so that's, you know, the honors kid mentality. But there's also, you know, I sound like a nut job, but I think that HGTV shows have done a fair amount of harm to our to our kind of aesthetic or idea, and like fed this, like, we have to have certain things in a house where our parents never did, and they seem to get along. Like, my parents never had stainless steel appliances back in the 80s, and those sorts of things. And so we always have, like, we have to have something to show for it. So, like, if you're cleaning, you feel like you have to do the TV show type of thing where it's like the before and after, but you're right. Like, I'm going to get rid of 10 of these books, or I'm going to clean out one of those drawers.
Yeah, there's a slow and steady. Yeah.
That's hard.
You know, element to some things.
That's very hard.
Yeah, true.
You don't always have the patience for that. So,
but I wanted to talk about one other example, one other sort of notion that came up when I was thinking about this, and this is about possessions. And so my brother-in-law moved out here to Ohio a while back with his father, and had an experience with him I found interesting. See, he's had to downsize recently as well, you know, re-downsize. Yeah. And in moving, he saw that his basketball was flat. Mm-hmm. Looked at it, and it was cracking.
Okay.
You know, it was not going to be able to just pump it back up. He needed a new Needed a new basketball. So decided, wanted a new one, and we bought him one for his first birthday. And then a few months later, it struck me. I don't think he's played basketball in 15 years. You know, but he'd always been a guy that had a basketball. Mm-hmm. And he just habitually wanted to be a guy who had a basketball. And it's sort of a silly example, but I think sometimes, A, whenever we get rid of something, our automatic impulse is to replace that yeah. thing with the exact same thing, even if the need has changed or whatever has changed. And I think there's also, again, on a bigger scale, I think sometimes – that sort of mentality speaks to our own self-conception.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if that's the right way, sort of the way we view ourselves, you know, whether it's identifying ourselves as a person who podcasts
yeah.
or a person who reads comics or a person who reads serious literature. I'm looking at you. you know, or a person who sees every Best Picture nominee in the theater. So, like it's I mean, yes, but, you know, but there's sometimes when we just have this, we want to have an identity
yeah.
of being that kind of person, whether it's the kind of person that has stainless steel in our kitchen mm-hmm. or it's the person again, you know, whatever that thing may be. And that's where sort of the phase I'm at is trying to interrogate myself about that, about my hobbies and my choices and my preferences and activities, you know, just because I wanted to podcast with M 11 years ago.
Yeah.
Does that mean I still want to podcast if M only joins me a couple times a year?
Mm-hmm.
Do I want to keep doing that or just to, you know, and I think some of it is how do I define myself to myself and how do I define myself to others.
That is a great point. And I will add that because there's, you know, I've trawled around on a few Reddit subreddits that are about like anti-consumerism or decluttering and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I have a lot of empathy for the idea that like you do get kind of attached to what your stuff says about you. And what yeah. you were just describing, because I think we all have that. It's just, it's ingrained in us because of the way our
yep.
culture is. I mean, it's a huge part of our culture. Cars are a great example, right?
Oh, perfect.
Yeah,
perfect.
But like, or actually books can be too, because, you know,
yep.
we have books, we have shelves up here, we have graphic novels, and then we have like a few books on like leaning shelves in our living room where we also have like decor and pictures and things like that.
Right. Sure.
But I've been into friends' houses where it's now, first of all, I get jealous whenever anybody has built-in bookshelves because those yeah. are just, I love built-ins anyway, but yeah. you see they have certain books and you're just like, are they there because you want us to?
That's decoration.
Yeah. Are you really reading The Republic that often that you need a copy?
You just want me to think.
Yeah. Or did you really make it all the way through Ulysses?
Come on. No one
no.
did. If you have Ulysses and it doesn't have a bookmark in it.
Heart.
Yeah, you're lying to somebody.
I mean, I had philosophy books on my shelf for a very long time because I had they were from college and I just kind of again held on to them. We have a few Norton's American English. We have two volumes in Norton Anthology of English Lit, one of the American, and we have the Shakespeare. You know, and again, they're just taking up space in the office here, so nobody really comes up here and says, "Ooh, you have a Norton" or anything like that. But yeah, I just think of people who are like, "Yeah, I have to have that copy." And sometimes those books are the decoration copies that are just very pretty.
Right.
Yeah. But other times it's like you're almost trying to impress who your undergrad English professor from 1997.
Yeah. Yeah, but there was sort of on status. I was listening to a podcast just to, coincidentally popped up over the weekend, I think, about minimalism.
Mm.
And part of it took a sort of a negative view of minimalism in the sense that it's a choice of status for many people.
Yeah.
It is a choice for the privileged in the sense that, you know, if you go to somewhat many of the minimalist type of sites, they might say something like, yes, you only need one pen. And that pen is $69, custom made, refillable ink gel packets at $11. You know, it's like in our current society, lots of people can accumulate. Mm-hmm. Right. If you have a Dollar General or a Walmart nearby, anyone can accumulate stuff.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you talked about hoarding type of shows in the previous installments of this. Those are not rich people.
No.
And so, but, you know, one way that you can be cultured, one way that, you know, sort of that the self-important, the hipster, you don't drive a Subaru, do you? The Subaru driver.
Stella drives a Subaru.
Exactly. Now
I drive makes sense. Well, I actually drive a Lexus because it was my parents. But anyway.
You know, but one way that type of person can differentiate themselves from the plebe, mm-hmm. from the commons, is by going minimalist. It's it was described as sort of the vegan of physical possessions.
That's a great way to describe it.
Which I thought was a great way to put it.
Because what's the old joke about vegans? How do you know somebody's a vegan?
Oh, yeah, tell
exactly. Wait a minute. They'll tell you. Now, when I think, because I've watched a fair amount of good, like really good minimalist videos where they're giving tips on how to do it. And I actually find some of those tips are pretty useful, even if you're not going fully minimalist. Yeah. I subscribe to the very Aristotelian ideal of finding the mean. Where in this case you have the overabundance, the over accumulation on one end in the middle of the zero, and somewhere, and the mean is not always the median, right? The mean is somewhere that is like it's an ideal, and it might look different to everybody, but I've always I read this was like Nick and McKee in Ethics like 20-30 years ago, but I was like always that idea always stuck with me that there is a mean between these two extremes. And in many cases, that's kind of what you're trying to hit. Mm-hmm. And it always made a lot of sense to me, especially with stuff like this, and in our society where people are always putting a binary on things and you're like, yeah, but it could be, it's somewhere in the middle. Let's find that. It's somewhere between there. Mm-hmm. Let's find that. And I think with minimalism and the kind of, even if it's not hoarding, it's just kind of like I just have a lot of stuff and I'm showing it off. Like there's got to be somewhere where I fit in here, where I don't feel like I don't have to be one or the other. And
well, one thing I'll say about certain accumulations, you know, our joke now is after, downsizing from my late father and then my father-in-law as well. It's that. Tom, I'm never going to have to buy envelopes, stamps, Christmas cards, yellow stickies, pens, markers, or index cards ever again.
Which actually kind of is a good segue into Swedish death cleaning. So this is something.
Have you heard our friend podcasting colleague Paul Hicks talk about this? He just uses the blunt phrase death prepping.
No, I haven't actually. I
which I love. It's a little blunt, but I love
need
it.
To go back and listen to more of his shows. It's been a while, but so this is something I actually came across for the first time on, of all places, Pinterest, because I think I was looking for something related to this topic. And I was like, oh, this is interesting. And then there is a book called by Margareta Magnusson, who is Swedish, obviously. The Gentle Art of Swedish Death Cleaning, How to Free Yourself and Your Family from a Lifetime of Clutter. And because it is Swedish,
It is a very straightforward slash efficient. Well, it's not very long. It's like maybe 150, 160 pages. And in fact, I had checked it out of the library. It's down, so I got to return it. In fact, it's due soon. But it leans into it goes through a lot of the stuff that you and I have seen other people talk about. It's along the lines of what you think about, like when you like Marie Kondo and stuff, like, you know, what do you feel that you really need? And what is, you know, what do you want to keep behind? Because you are essentially, in this case, you are preparing to not overburden your children with things. And what I liked more about the book than the cleaning tips was just how she leaned into talking about death in a matter-of-fact way, because our culture does not deal with death and grief very well. I mean, people get judgy if you're not grieving properly, you know, and the emotion behind it and the attachment to things. And I thought this was I really would recommend, if anybody listening wants to read it, I recommend checking it out of the library, because it is really, like I said, it's quick. It's kind of funny in places, because there's one point she's going through things just like, do I think my grandson needs a samurai sword or something like that? I was just like, wait, what?
That's obviously a yes.
You always need a samurai sword. But yeah, so I think you've heard of this.
Yes.
And
yes. Yeah. Because I think a lot of you are doing a lot of this for your children. And it actually, I would say it actually matters, obviously, if you have no children, that's one situation. If you have an only child, that's one situation. If you have multiple children, that's, again, you know, that's going to change the dynamics, you know, of all of this. And so that's something to keep in mind. Again, at the vibe that we're at, you know, going through this from one passed away father and one elderly father, you know, we have been able to have some conversations about it and rope M into it in terms of, and again, if you had multiple kids, that would actually be tougher, you know, because, you know, whatever those dynamics might be. So, but being able to talk about in terms of, you know, some of the stuff, do you think you'll eventually want this? Do you, you know, having some of those sorts of conversations about just stuff that you've accumulated or stuff that are family heirlooms that, and it's one weird thing that just generationally is happening. Obviously, families in the U.S., around the world, but specifically in the U.S., we're just having fewer kids. And it's an obvious one if you just go back. My grandfather, I'm just thinking on the one side, I think, I don't know, grandfather was one of 13 and grandma was one of 11. You know, whatever it was, you go back 100 years ago, huge, huge families. And there's this funneling effect is what I call it, as I just have one sister and my father was an only child. My mom just had one sibling, but whatever had been accumulated in the generations before them, it's come to, it's all going to go to M, right? It is all funneling to M. And so, you know, in some cases, you know, it's maybe three or four generations back from different, you know, wings of the family, right? Yeah. You know, where things have settled in our place and eventually in there. So, you know, in a case like that, if you're talking the family stuff, it's certainly worth getting the input. Again, especially in M's case, they're in their 30s, an adult. Yeah. Owns a house, so obviously is ready on that side to have not just the emotional side, but the practical physical side of some of those conversations.
Yeah, because Brad's going to be 18, so this is just right. This is a kind of I'm off on my new adventure, and we're kind of off on ours. My parent, you know, the kind of the inverted pyramid to the small amount of people in the house on my side of the family actually is like my I don't know how many kids my great grandfather is on my dad's side had, but my mom's grandmother had like 12 or 13 kids, and then my mom was one of four, my dad's one of five. It's just me and my sister, and we get along. So that the conversation.
Let me tell you that really.
Yeah, I was going to say because the relationships really. Between people, the dynamics between siblings can be really, really warped. And if you're fighting over certain things, that makes things more complicated. The two of us, like I said earlier, we're both in our 40s, and we both have houses, and she doesn't have any kids, and we just have the one kid. So there's one grandchild for my parents.
Right.
Yeah. And we don't want a lot of their stuff. So right. Like I joked to her, we're just going to sell anything that's not nailed down. And I'm like, kind of serious. I'm like, I don't even care about them.
Yeah.
That's the thing. And I think this is a good position to give my parents some credit and to give like kind of how things are.
And also to say, I mean, and there's a difference between quote unquote valuable stuff that you might have your eye on because it's a beautiful piece of furniture or versus the sentimental stuff. And you might want a little bit of both.
Well, the other thing is that like you kind of want to be in a situation where when you're leaving these things on, nobody is looking toward a payout, you know, or a cash grab. Like my parents' stuff could be utterly worthless. The house could be utterly worthless and we get no money from it. And it doesn't change anything about my life. You know, and I'm like, that's kind of the position you want your kids to be in, so that when you leave, like, they're not relying on you for it. And I can only imagine, like, having an only child, you want to try to avoid placing too much of the burden on them because you know that they are going to have
that's the balance.
So, yeah, because we've done the clean outs and things or seen some of the downsizing stuff and it can be now, I actually have to ask you. So because I've done some fair amount of genealogy, especially in the last year or two with my dad's side of the family, who the Italian side, which was really hard to figure out. But because
the Panarese,
right? So because my local public library has a full subscription to Ancestry.com.
Perfect.
I didn't have to, because Ancestry's expensive. If you're not aware of it, it's very expensive. So I would go there. Brett was like taking driver ed, and I was like needed to hang out somewhere. So I went to the library, as you do. And I sat at the computer and I was doing family research. The only money I spent was $25 to the New York City Department of Health to get my great grandfather's death certificate. Because you had to pay $25 bucks for a processing fee. I'm like, fine, because that gave me more information than I needed. And I was looking through old census records and stuff. So I have to ask you, how far back have you been able to do? And how far back in this country are you as far as like when people came over?
Yeah, my father-in-law, who I mentioned, he was adopted. So that's a dead end. So we don't know on that side what the situation is. But on one side of my mother's side, I'm Alan Wright Middleton, the Wright side of the family, the Wrights. Go back pretty far, Dutch and French Huguenot, so 1700s, you know, so that side of the family pretty far up in the Hudson Valley,
New York State.
New York.
So that
New Amsterdam. That area on that on one side, on that side. Oh, wow. So that's one, but I don't know as much on the. On the other side.
Well, because you mentioned heirlooms. And so when I look at my, I don't know about Amanda's, but I look at my side of the family. So my mom's side. Now her dad's side, I have to do more research into. Her mother's family, the Bretts, which is where Brett gets their name from, emigrated from England into Newfoundland in the early 1800s, but didn't come to the United States until probably, I want to say, just after the First World War. So they were in Newfoundland, and Newfoundland is not a is the like the poorest province in Canada. You know, my great great grandfather was a shipbuilder. You know, they were tradesmen, right?
Right.
And then my dad's side of the family, I think the 1890s at the earliest. So we're talking the huddled masses. New York City, Italian settling in Brooklyn in the late 1800s, in the 1900s, et cetera, et cetera. So when you talk about heirlooms, it's funny because like, and I think a lot of, I think it just it depends on like where you are and the culture you're coming from, because a lot of people that I know growing up, there's not a lot of generational wealth because they were poor ass immigrants coming over 100 years ago or 150 years ago. So like your heirlooms are the more sentimental things. Like the one piece of my grandmother's stuff that I have is it's one of those big ceramic Christmas trees that there's a light inside of it and you turn on it, it lights up. And she had this thing on her side table for every growing up, and they were closing the house down and getting ready to sell. She had moved into a senior community.
Right.
Yeah. And I was like, I told my parents, like I said, if you can snag it, get me that thing. Okay, and I have it. I have, they sent it to me. I still have it. Awesome. Put it out every year. Awesome. But it's stuff like that. So there's no heirloom piece that anybody was
nothing wrong with
aside from maybe like military memorabilia. Because my grandfather was a turret gunner on a B-17 in the Second World War. My dad was air traffic control in Nam. And so there is military paraphernalia that I think needs to either stay with somebody in the family or, to quote Indiana Jones, it belongs in the museum.
Yes.
We actually have a Vietnam Vets Association that will accept donations.
Perfect.
Yeah. But yeah. So it's just kind of interesting when we talk about like heirlooms and things like that. And because I watch a lot of Antiques Roadshow too.
Yeah. And it's funny going through my my father-in-law stuff. He had stuff from his father and grandfather, whatever, how far back it went, but little plastic tubes with coins in them.
Oh, interesting.
From 1910s, 1920. I mean, they would have been, 50 years old when he got them. And we actually took him up to a place and got some $67 worth of stuff. That wasn't but that's about all you can expect from any collectible. Let that be a lesson.
Yeah.
To all our geeky friends, don't expect to cash in on anything.
I sold a few years ago. I read and then through and then sold everything I had Teen Titans, starting with the Dan Jurgens written 96 series all the way up until the end of the New 52, because that's all I had. That was not New Teen Titans or New Titans. And I had a few old issues of Teen Titans that were, in kind of crappy condition. I got maybe $150 for them at my LCS. Yeah. I just like, here's like, you guys buy comics. Yeah. And they're like, they're like, we can get there. It was $150 in store credit. But I was like, look, I want these out of my house. And I think about that with the comics, where it's like, you're not going to get a lot for those.
Yeah. And I guess the nice thing is, if it's, knock on wood, it's not going to be anytime soon, but M knows our LCS. M knows the guys who work there. So if worst came to worst, they would know what to do with them.
Well, and it's interesting is the eBay effect. And I think this is starting to slow because eBay is not as dynamic as it used to be.
Yeah.
But the eBay effect of somebody once sold this like Disney VHS for like $100 and all of a sudden it's like, you might have this.
Therefore,
yeah, and
yeah,
it's not.
Oh, yeah,
and actually,
right,
the podcast to listen to people gripe about that is Garage Sale Gloat with Chris Honeywell.
Yes.
Which I love Garage Sale Gloat. It's every, when he comes out with a new episode, I'm just like, I'm first in line to listen because I just love listening to that show. And I do love when they talk about, they'll talk about that stuff because they go around and, I mean, Rochester must have like this, we never see.
I don't get it.
I'm like,
I don't
my God, because we get maybe a few here and there every weekend. It's all the same shit too. It's all clothes and maybe a few
books. I've also never been to a thrift shop that has comic books. That's more on Jared Albrecht, the yard sale.
I have.
Okay, maybe once, but it hardly ever happens to me. Or a yard sale.
I have, and
I just don't find comics.
Yeah,
at those things.
I have, and I've been to an antique mall that had them. And they're either really, really good idea, they're really, really good deals, or really terrible deals. Like the comics at the thrift store might be 50 cents a piece, and they're not really good. But so like you find a few and you fish them out. But then you go to like one of the antique malls where people buy like a booth and they set their booth up and everything. And somebody's selling like a Silver Surfer comic from 1994 that I can find at my LCS for $1.50, and they're selling for $8. Yeah, and just like, yeah, so it's. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's but yeah, you listen to Chris and whoever he's with, and they talk about how people go on eBay and they start to think that this thing that really should be like $5 is worth way more. And it's kind of, everybody thinks that they're going to be the one to get the deal or make the money.
And they, also just one basic thing that people misunderstand is that, you know, if they run across a, you know, books, you know, parents' books or something, they said, oh, these were all huge sellers. I got 25 John Grisham books. Everyone loves John Grisham. Yes.
Everyone.
And everyone has them. And every library has them. If they were popular, they ain't worth anything. That's the problem. And that's the, I think that's just an obvious mistake that people make. When they, you know, the eyes light up when they see, you know, all of these records or books, whatever it is, and all this popular stuff. That means it's not worth much.
Records are, they were for a while, and they still are more and more becoming that thing that people will just overprice if it's a well known.
Yeah, true.
You know, it's your Rolling Stones, your Fleetwood Mac, your like well known artists. But again, like, you know, how many copies of Tommy were printed, right? You know, and those sorts of things. You have to remember, like, you know, there is Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band is a great album, but I'm pretty sure there are a lot of copies out there.
Yeah.
But what's funny is you go to a library sale, and I bought like maybe three or four records out of a library of library sales over the years. I got a Paul Simon album. I got Tommy, actually. That's where I got my copy of Tommy. Mm-hmm. And the best deal was the fact that I found on vinyl the soundtrack to the 1984 movie Streets of Fire.
Oh,
for
me.
$2. Yeah. But
man.
I had to sift through a ton of really old country music because I'm in Virginia.
Right. Yeah.
A lot of classical. I love classical music. A lot of classical. A lot of like the Ray Conn of Singers Present Christmas. And
Yep.
Ye old Baptist minister and his 1 hour of sermons. I'm like, who was listening to these? So there's a lot. You have to sift through a lot of crap. You have to do that at bookstores too. You're right. And the best thing about the library sale is that when you want to read something and you're just like, oh, I remember seeing this and it was like a bestseller a few years ago and now it's like $1.95. You're like, I'll grab this now. Like,
yeah,
because I can get rid of it.
Yep.
All right. So, kind of the last couple of things to talk about, because we've talked about cleaning out other things. It's a whole process of grief. There's some grief.
Yeah.
There's some catharsis. And that was actually an episode of Marie Kondo's series, so the first one.
Yeah.
It was. I remember it very distinctly. I think that they were out in California. And it was a woman whose husband had, and she was probably in her 60s. Like she was So she was out and about, and she was, you know, living, doing her best to live her life, but her husband's clothes were all still in the closet. And the whole thing was about her processing this grief over the fact that her husband had died, like, I think of a heart attack suddenly a few years ago. And apparently he had this big personality. And I think about that when every once in a while it's like, you know, here's another batch of stuff that dad had. And you're just like, you know, you're thinking to yourself, like, I'm kind of like glad you take breaks in doing it. You don't feel like you have to do it, like, you know, all the time and stuff. So it is interesting to see, like, witness somebody else doing it and trying to help where you can and not be too pushy. But then we both have our stuff. And we've already talked about the stuff that getting rid of collectibles that aren't broken or disgusting. Like, if you're getting a headache from opening up a comic book, throw the comic book away.
It's a bad sign. Trust me, friend.
I got some really bad. Bad mildew will give me a raging headache. That and cigarette smoke. I don't know what it is, and it's, I guess it's an allergy or something. Doesn't cause any anaphylactic reaction. Just a really bad headache. So I will read the book and I will chuck it in the recycling bin because I cannot
live within that.
But, like, you know, there's certain collectibles where you're just like, I don't need this anymore, and you find a home for it, and sometimes the home is the trash.
You know, going back to Marie Kondo, I think that in terms of getting rid of our own stuff, I think, you know, her two concepts, we talked about the one of sparking joy. I want to talk about the other one for a little bit here. And I rolled my eyes the first time I heard about thanking an item for its service before you dispose of it. I'm a certified public accountant, Tom. I hold a tenured faculty position in the College of Business at a large state university in the Midwest. I'm not a new age woo-woo person.
Neither am I.
But me and my family, we have found some real value in this. And I think there are two elements at work in this. Again, I've been thinking about this weekend in terms of thinking about this conversation. And because we have to acknowledge that disposing of something or giving away something, I mean, unless it's giving you a headache, but other things, it may be painful. Yeah. It may be hurtful. It does hurt. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a struggle, right? I mean, the things that are easy to give away, I mean, unless you're a severe hoarder, I mean, but for most of us, I think it's safe to say the things that are easy to give away, you know what? We've given them away. It's the difficult things. That's why we're talking about this. And it is not the same as someone dying, but, you know, it's not full blown grieving to give away, you know, a book that was meaningful to you as a teenager, or a souvenir from your trip to Disney, or the matchbooks from the restaurant where you proposed, or just a piece of clothing that's past its expiration date for whatever reason. But I was thinking about this in terms of grieving. It's not that you need all five stages of the Kubler-Ross method, but what Marie Kondo has you do when you thank an item for its service is you shoot straight to acceptance. That shoots you straight to the last stage, because it's not serious enough to be bargaining and be angry about. It shoots you straight to acceptance. So I think that is valuable. And also, I'm a big fan of thankfulness. I just think that the positive impact that it can have on a person being thankful is valuable. Again, I'm not really thanking that DVD for its service, but what I am being thankful to the universe, to God, to the creators of this movie. I'm being thankful to someone that I have good memories, that I had good times experiencing. It's not about the item, okay? thanking that shirt before I throw it out. There's no benefit for the shirt. Okay. I'm acknowledging that, but it helps me. It's about me. And I think acceptance and thankfulness, I think they have nothing but upsides. And so that weird little ritual, I found it powerful. I'm confessing that to you, Tom. I have found that powerful.
I had the initial same reaction you did. Or like, you kind of like, I get it, but this is silly.
Kidding me? Come on, I'm not going to do this.
I've not done that. But the way you phrased them, like, it makes a lot more, it makes even more sense. And so I think, you know, employing that and seeing what, as I look across around the room here, I'm like seeing what could be.
I'm sure the first few times we did it, it was almost like a family joke. Like, before I throw this out, okay, Valor, I'm just going to thank it for its service and get rid of it. And then it kind of helped me, Tom. It kind of helped me.
I mean, that 40-year-old VHS copy of Star Wars I got in the basement, I will be thanking that for its service. Absolutely. I'm not, I have vowed to not let go of that until they put the original for the original of the trilogy on 4K or deep Blu-ray for real this time.
George Lucas.
No, but you're right. You do thank it for its, and you know, and that's a really good idea. And the thankfulness, the gratefulness in those sorts of things, especially when you are trying to kind of take stock of the good things and be thankful for the good things in a time when things are very, very rough, you know, just around, like you look around and there's a lot of really, really rough things going on. And it's rocky in a lot of ways. And like, so being able to, but then one of the things you have to do, as I was journaling about myself the other day, is like, you have to live day to day in the midst of a lot of, like, you know, Let's say we're in a depression or something, right? You know, like when things are real instability, and a lot of the things that tend to go on that are beyond your control, and trying to find those moments of thankfulness are really, really helpful. I'm avoiding a certain phrase because I don't want to have to pay royalties to a certain fellow podcaster. Hi, Shag. But no, it's a really good point. And too, and I think you're right with the thanking the objects, because I'm not coming at, and I don't think you are coming at, getting rid of things from like this idealist point of view or a philosophical point of view, like damn the man, down with guilt or a thing like that. It really is it's more of a practical thing. It's a practical thing in that, like, I need to make sure that I have space to move around my house, but it's also a practical thing.
Yeah, it's space, it's time, and it's money, it's effort, it's all those limited things
too. Like, you are lessening the burden that you're placing on your kid. So it's not, so in that case, yes, thanking those things for having been there, because they didn't mean something to you, even if it's like a microsecond of real meaning, because there are certain things that mean more than others. So yeah, that's really good.
Right. Sure.
Yeah, so I do want to bring this as kind of like, kind of, I had nowhere to put this in, and I'm not really not going to talk about how we keep buying too much new stuff, because you just kind of have to commit yourself to something. I think I was talking about on the blog, I've talked about how I have like these intentions I set for the year, and one of them is not buying anything old. So like, if it's a movie, if it's a movie, I will rent it.
Right.
If it's a book, I will find a copy to take out. If it's, you know, if it's a comic, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But the exceptions being Free Comic Book Day, the comic convention, there's like three or four days of exception, but, you know, and stuff like that. But the thing is, like, so on a recent Alan's Eyes and Ears episode, you were talking about spreadsheets, which I'm shocked that an accountant would have a spreadsheet. And I think I sent you a
look. Jack and Eddie's ears just perked up.
And I jokingly sent you, so when I do on collecting month to month, I carry around a paper organizer, paper day planner, because that's what gets me through. I can't do digital. I need
paper. Oh, Tom, that That is such a it retro is. Choice. I appreciate that. That's so hipster.
Folded in there is a piece of it might be a post-it. For years, I was using the back of the Far Side Daily Calendar cartoon. this is a memo pad that we rescued from my in-laws' house or whatever, and I will write a list. It's here's the month, and then the comic books, movies, TV, books, graphic novels, podcast episodes remaining and stuff. And every time I finish one of them, I put a hash mark, and that's how I track from month to month. And then when I do the post of the update, and I sent you a picture of it, and it's like, you know, here's my method, which is like completely just like, you know, whatever. Although I will tell you that I have do.
Although to in your defense, when the EMP hits, you're going to be well true. Prepared to keep organized.
I'm still the idiot who writes.
Me and Luke.
I write drafts in longhand still. So, but I do have a system of spreadsheets where I have a big spreadsheet, a workbook in Excel, and it literally is just like a list of the movies, and there's a tab for the TV shows, and then there's the comics and across the thing, the issue, the total number and stuff like that. So that like when I delete them, the total number goes down. I do find that really, really useful to keep track because.
Are you subtly implying that you want to audit my BMT 2000 intro to Excel class? Is that what I'm getting from this?
I took a computer science 101 intro to Microsoft Office class in college because I needed another math credit or something. I know a little bit of Excel. Now getting a mail merge right on the first try. That's witchcraft.
I've never seen that happen.
It takes at least two or three tries. Anyway, but I have I like the fact that I was able to put it into a spreadsheet because what I did was I added columns of what format I have it on. Do I have it physically,
nice. Right.
Or is it on a streaming service? And if it's on the streaming service, which one? And if it's not, can I get it? And I think with movies, there's like two that I cannot get my hands on, and I don't even know which ones they are. But yeah, it's interesting because I have a couple. I have too many subscriptions, and then there's stuff like Canopy, which you get through. A lot of people get through the library and has a lot of very random films and stuff like that. But it's so much fun. Kind of the same way Libby. Is really good and my
right. Yeah, for me, yeah,
unfortunately, I'm kind of bummed that we don't have a book because Libby does not have a good selection. Doesn't really have a selection of comic book related stuff. They have some magazines, like I can read Empire magazine if I want to. But yeah, I know. So I like that because then I can be like, okay, then I can just kind of I actually have the printed out and I'll cross out and I'll update and stuff like that. But you have a much more complicated. System, I believe.
For the permanent comics, I do, and I've been keeping track of what I read on a annual basis. I just do a weekly blog post that no one reads. I mean, no one sees it. I just do that. So at the end of the year, I have the raw data to do the annual report, and. I just happened to notice that at the end of 2024, I've been doing it for 10 years. So I was able to do the decade of review. And episode has not come out yet, but I recently got feedback on that episode from Jeremiah Jones Goldstein. And what Jeremiah shared some of his ideas. There's some of his results from his reading. He's been tracking his comics for the last few years, and he gave me some ideas of new categories.
That's cool. I'll be looking forward to that.
Different number of different publishers, different titles, in interesting stuff. But I have to admit, in terms of the short term stuff, like my reading list for books and viewing sort of priority list for TV, you know, stuff on Prime and Netflix and all that. I do have that written down in my spiral notebook. Cross them off as they as I work my way through them. And then, you know, when the page is about half crossed out, you know, you just start a new page. You add the new things to it and keep on rolling. So nothing wrong with a little pen and paper.
I am a big proponent of a good quality spiral notebook.
Yes, because I have
too many of them. I use them.
Well, as we've established, we will never have to buy paper.
Have to buy them again. No.
Or pens.
Yeah. No. And I it's funny because you keep a better record than I do because I'm always having to readjust how many I have left because I for some reason I'm like did I buy a new thing? Yeah. So I'm trying to keep myself. That's the other thing. I'm trying to keep myself more honest as I go.
I do have to ask this. Just about your process, because it's been 7 or 8 years now from the very beginning. And I know famously you also have the pop culture affidavit idea list also famously somewhere. First off, how far would you guess you're through that pop culture affidavit list? Are we 2/3 crossed off? Are we 10% crossed off?
I would say we are closer to 2/3. It's not in the room with me. It's the same piece of paper I've had for like, I think I've had the printed that out like back in 2012 or something. Now I've written new things on it.
That's amazing.
If I remember later, I will do the math.
I mean, that's sort of what I was going to ask you also in terms of the uncollecting lists, those lists of unread books, unread comics. Do things get added to those lists also? Or is it just what you had?
No, things get added. So like if I get something for like Christmas or something, or I buy a new book, it gets added to the list because it's something I haven't read or watched or something.
Makes sense.
Current television shows, I think, are the exception. So like we were watching, we caught up on Severance on Apple TV recently and Yellow Jackets comes out this week. So those won't count because they're currently going in the same way that we sit down to watch them. Like you would sit down on a Tuesday or Wednesday or whatever Law and Order is on and watch Law and Order or, you know, so that's current television or current movies don't like the Captain America movie coming out on Friday won't count because it's a, movie, but if I were to get the Captain America movie on DVD, I have to watch the DVD. So I do add things. Mm-hmm. The only category out of all of them that I have completely zeroed out is graphic novels. I have not a single trade or graphic novel in my possession that I have not read. And it's easy to keep that towards zero because I am the type of person who once he gets a trade or graphic novel, sits down and reads it right away.
You'd read it pretty quick because I know, at least in the old days, didn't Atlas have $5 trades?
Yes, they did.
At various points in sales. Yeah. So I imagine
Hello has a discount pre-owned graphic novel.
Right.
Yep. There's price stickers on them, so they vary. Depending, because there's a few that are like, wow, that like somebody's selling something. It's like an old omnibus or something. So they're not selling that for $5, but it's at a deep discount. So I've bought too many of those. But hey, man, that's how I got my copy of Batman from the 30s to the 70s. So I can't really.
Right.
I saw that and I was like, I am buying that.
See, I absolutely me and Michael Bailey, we pat you on the back. We're proud of you, buddy. Right.
So we are going to wrap this up. And before we do that, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you?
Thank you. Thank you. Most of my work is comic book related and can be found at the Relatively Geeky Podcast Network. That feed includes, of course, the Quarterbin Podcast, Doom Speak, Alan's Ears, and our most popular show, the very occasional Short Box Showcase.
Well, it's because of M.
Yes. Yes, it is. Look, the numbers don't lie.
All right. And I will be back, I hope, next month. I took 2 months off because I was just mental health is a thing, and sometimes with this too, it's like the anxiety, the depression gets a hold of you, and I don't do anything. But I have no idea what I'm doing next month. But until then, Thank you very much for listening, and take care.
Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Affidavit, which is hosted and produced by me, Tom Panneries. The theme music is Pop Rock by Scott Holmes and is used under Creative Commons licensing. You can contact and follow me via email at popcultureaffidavit@gmail.com, on Facebook and Instagram as Pop Culture Affidavit, and on Blue Sky as Pop Aff. That's P-O-P-A-F-F. And of course, you can find episode links, show notes, and blog posts on my website, popcultureaffidavit.com. Thanks very much for listening, and come back next time for more pop culture randomness.